Good evening, Gemar Tov, everyone. Just begin with Hakaras HaTov. Thank you all for coming. Thank you to Tracy and the office team for putting together the details and everybody being flexible. And thank you to everybody who has enabled our community of learning, our kol, this year to continue not just to survive during unusual times, but to thrive in so many ways. So we get together once again as we approach Yom Kippurim during this period of Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And I'll reiterate the same caveat that I have said in past years, but it becomes more and more true every year, and that is that it should be clear and well understood that whatever thoughts I'm going to share tonight, it's not because I presume to have any insight more than anybody else, except quite the opposite, to know every year how much more I need to improve and I need to grow. So, you know, they used to say the Bali Musar, before they would give a Musar Shmuz, they would say, I'm really speaking to myself. But that would presume that I was on that level. So I'm not even going to say that because I'm fairly self-aware. And so hopefully these are just thoughts that I've been thinking about for myself and aspiring to, and that may resonate with you, and you could find some way to enrich your own relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam through these ideas, because ultimately that's what we're striving for this time of year. That's what we're focusing on. The Ribono Shel Olam, he wants a relationship with us. He's looking for us. He's waiting for us. He wants us to succeed. He wants us to do our best. And so he gives us the gift of tshuva. It's for us, so that we can be close with him. And each one of us, we're trying. That's all we're doing. We're trying. We're trying one step at a time, one day at a time. That's what this process is all about. So over the summer, I got a book in preparation for tonight, which I read, with many strategies. It's called The Science of Change. It's an excellent book. It's a woman by the name of a researcher, a professor by the name of Katie Milkman, like in Milkman, that's her last name. And it's an excellent book, and it has many fantastic strategies of exactly that, the science of how to change. Because so many of us are thinking, there are things we need to change. So how do we change them? So she has some excellent strategies. But after I finished the book, I was actually thinking that the truth is that tshuva, it's not simply about behavioral strategies. It's not just about specific approaches to change. Tshuva is not just a set of hows, like how to deal with being overweight. It's not just about how to deal with being impatient. Tshuva is about a holistic re-envisioning of ourselves. It's about a rebirth. It's about a total transformation. It's not just about one specific avenue. So I started to wonder, do any of these, and some of these strategies we've talked about in the past, I started to wonder, do any of these really capture the fullness, the essence, the scope of what we're trying to accomplish with tshuva? And it seemed to me that not exactly. And so although I recommend this book, I think we need to think about something deeper. Is there, could we imagine that there is a comprehensive approach, that there is a holistic mahalach, there is one key to the entirety, to the full transformation of tshuva? Is there one all-encompassing avenue to finding our own greatness, to being that person that we want to become? Is there one key? And is there one key that's not just some kind of like marketing stunt? Is there really one nekuda? And I think the answer is that there is. There might be. And the way to think about this, perhaps, is about my stance. Literally, my stance, how I am positioned, how I stand. That's the question. What's my stance? That is the core question. Because a stance, the direction, the orientation, the approach, that changes everything. It's not just how I interact, but the way that I am approaching this issue, my stance is going to define how I'm going to address it. So we need to think about the stance. Each one of us, what is the stance? What's my stance? What's our stance? And maybe the Rambam gives us a hint. Because the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva tells us something unusual, surprising even. The Rambam tells us in the fifth chapter, when he deals with the idea of free choice, of Bechira Chavshis, the Rambam tells us, don't think what some fools think, that everything is predetermined, that the Ribbono Shel Olam decided what we're going to be and how we're going to be, and that's what we are. No! Al Yavor B'mach Shavtecha. Don't think, Davar Zeh, that people think, Tipshe Umos Olam V'rov Golmei B'nei Yisrael, all the people who aren't thoughtful at all, no one here. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gozer al ha'adam b'tchilas b'riyoso, that God somehow preordains everything for us. It's not true. It's totally false. Ein ha'davar kein, Ella, the Rambam says, kol adam, every person, rohu yilo, rohu yilo, it is appropriate for us, it's possible for us, it's fitting for us, rohu yilo, lios tzaddik, each one of us, we can be a tzaddik. Like whom? Tzaddik k'moshe Rabbeinu. That's what the Rambam says. We could be like a tzaddik, like Moshe Rabbeinu. That's a little surprising. We know that when it comes to prophecy, to nevuah, Moshe Rabbeinu was sui generis. One of a kind. There's no Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Rambam doesn't say Navi. He says that we could be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. So that already starts getting us thinking. It's interesting. On the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu was like Kimat Amalach, spent 40 days and 40 nights up there. On the other hand, he also had to navigate spiritual growth, his personal spiritual growth within his marriage. Chazal say, his children didn't go exactly the way that he had hoped. He had in-law issues. So thinking that we could be like Moshe Rabbeinu, maybe there's something there. But what does it mean when the Rambam says that we could be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu? Where does the Chumash describe Moshe Rabbeinu as a tzaddik? The truth is, when you think about it for a second, where does the Chumash describe Moshe Rabbeinu at all? We know a lot about what he did, but where do we know about who he was? So the Torah tells us exactly who he was. What does the Torah tell us? That he was V'ish Moshe. He was what? That's right. He was an Anav. He was an Anav. And maybe this is it. Moshe Rabbeinu was Anav Mikol Adam. That was his tzidkus, that was his greatness. And the truth is that maybe Moshe Rabbeinu got this because of his closeness to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because who is the ultimate source of Anava? The Ribbono Shel Olam himself. How do I know this? Many of you know intuitively, or you know from books, or from listening to great speeches, that there's something in the English language and in every language called the rule of threes. That when you have something which is Chud HaMishulash, which runs in sets of threes, it has a certain ring to it, has a certain resonance. So that's why there are, I don't know, three little pigs, or liberty, fraternity, galite, whatever that is. You know, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. Like, when you speak, it's a klal. My speech coach, Zichrono Levracha, Gerald August, his memory should be for a blessing, taught me everything I know. So Gerald was very fond of this. So we got to find those rules of three so that the listeners, you go with it. So you know what the Gemara in Megillah says? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol makom, every place, sha'ata motzei gvurasa shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where you find the greatness, the might of the Ribono Shel Olam, sham ata motzei anvasanuso, that's where you find his anava. And then the Gemara says something really extraordinary. Dover zeh kosev b'torah, v'shonoi b'neviim, u'meshulash b'ksuvim. It's written three times in Torah, Neviim, and Ksuvim. Because we want to get it really clear that the Ribono Shel Olam, as great as he is, kiviyachol, whatever that means, that greatness is in his anava. And the Rambam says that we can be like Moshe Rabbeinu. We can be that anav mikol adam. And maybe this is the stance. If the Rambam, right in the heart of Hilchos Tshuva, is telling us that we have the option, the opportunity, the invitation to transform our lives with free choice, with Bechira Chavshis, and he gives us the model of Moshe Rabbeinu, so then what's our stance? Our stance is anava. And maybe we could consider that anava is actually that key, that one comprehensive principle that incorporates the 360 of tshuva. Now it's very important to define anava, because it could be misunderstood. There was a great dayan in England. His name is Rav Yecheskel Abramsky. He was a prolific Talmud Chacham, an author, and he was once called to testify in a matter before a British court that had relevance to Jewish law. So he was the Gadol Hadar in England in the 20th century. So he was brought in to testify in this case. So he took the stand and the oath and the whole thing. And if you've ever been to a court in England, you've seen they wear the frocks and they wear the sheitlach, the whole, like, it's a big to-do over there. So he sits down at the table after he takes his oath. So the attorney says to him, Rabbi Abramsky, are you the rabbinical judge of so-and-so? And he says, yes, I am. So the attorney says to him, are you the greatest authority on Jewish law in all of the United Kingdom? And Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky looks at him and says, yes, I am. So the judge looks down at him and says, Rabbi, don't they teach you about humility in your religion? And Diane Abramsky says, but Your Honor, I'm under oath. Because anava does not mean or does not even imply self-effacement to say that I'm a nothing. That's not anava. That actually probably, we could suggest, is another midah. It's called shiflus, lowness, which is a good midah and it's an important midah, but it's in a different context. It's not to be confused with anava. That's not anava. Anava is probably best defined as humility, but humility in the sense of self-awareness. Understanding who I am, what are my gifts, what are my limitations, where does it all come from? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me certain qualities and certain challenges. And this is who I am. This is the core of emotional intelligence. It's humility. It's having an accurate sense of self. That is anava. And that's why Rav Kook, in his comments on Midos, he associates the concept of anava with a really interesting Hebrew word, with the word hineni. Here I am. This is who I am. Hineni is not arrogance. It's not hubris. It's actually humility. It's saying, I understand, Ribono Shel Olam, I am here because you put me here with my particular gifts, with my qualities, with my kochos, with my chesronos. I understand exactly who I am, and I'm ready to use those I'm ready to channel those. Hineni. That's anava. Anava is, I am here. That's why Rav Kook points out that a person who, when they think about themselves, when they self-reflect, it brings them to a level of sadness. He says that is anava psula. It's disqualified, misplaced, misused quality. That's not anava. Anava, says Rav Kook, it brings simcha gvura v'kavod pnimi, joy, a sense of feeling good about myself, a sense of self-esteem, self-worth, confidence, gvura meaning confidence, v'kavod pnimi, an inner dignity, a sense of I belong here. That's what anava is. So now you're starting to think, maybe anava does have something to do with tshuva. Maybe we never thought about it before. But says the Eilik HaBeis Avraham of Slonim, a person who doesn't have anava, who doesn't have an accurate sense of self, who has a warped or distorted sense of self, they're not going to repair. They're not going to re-envision themselves. Why would I need to re-envision myself? I'm great. Who are you to tell me otherwise? I'm really fine. Of course, why would I look for inspiration somewhere else? I'm doing just fine. But is that a real accurate sense of self? Of course not. Because we all have opportunities for growth. We all have things that we should be proud of, and we all have things that we need to work on. So of course, says the Beis Avraham, a person who, Rachmana Lislan, is struggling with gaiva, with arrogance, they're not going to be interested in tshuva. Why would they look for self-improvement? Why would they ask anybody else for feedback? Why would they ever learn more? Why would they look to grow? They're good where they are. Which, of course, that's not anava at all. That's the maka of gaiva. But I think it's much deeper than this. So yes, it's true that a person who has anava is open to the process of tshuva. But maybe the truth is, if we understand, if we really consider having a stance in life which is a stance of anava, it's not just that it opens us up for dealing with the past, but a stance of anava actually enables us to create that tshuva, to create that future, to create that self that we want to see for ourselves. So let's think about this through our rule of threes, of course. Through Bein Adam LaChaveiro, the kind of interpersonal self we want to see. Through Bein Adam LaMakom, through the kind of spiritual being, the connection with Hashem that we want to see. And through Bein Adam LeAtzmo, a person within ourselves. We'll take a few minutes to realize how our stance of anava can transform, mamish transform our entire life in each of these areas. Bein Adam LaChaveiro. If I have a stance of anava when it comes to Bein Adam LaChaveiro, what does it mean? It means if I have a healthy understanding of myself, I realize who I am, what my gifts are, what my challenges are, but I also realize that I'm obviously not the only guy in the room, although in this case, I am the only guy in the room, but I realize that there are other people, and the same way that I have gifts, somebody else has gifts also. There's something that I can learn from them. There's something about them that I can appreciate, that I can value. That comes from a stance of anava. I can see somebody else. A person who doesn't have a healthy sense of anava, they're very self-absorbed. So do they ever have room to see anybody else? Their I crowds out the value of somebody else. You ever have a conversation with somebody who is struggling with anava, Rachmana Litzlan? Sometimes it's hard to get a word in. It's hard. Do they make space for you? Do they ever ask you how your day was? How your life is? How your job is? How your friends are, how your children are. A person who's an anav knows there's space for me, but my space is limited because I'm only this. This is who I am. But there's another person. How is that person? Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Zecher Tzadok V'Kadosh Levracha. Interestingly, he writes a ton about anava. When I started looking into this, I was like, it was really striking to me. He writes all the time about the midah of anava. And he says he learned the midah of anava from his father. From his father, who came from Europe, who was a humble, simple man, who Rabbi Sacks said taught him so many things, who was an anav, Rabbi Sacks said, because he was so open to others, to learning from others, to being inspired by others, to appreciating others, to appreciating so many aspects of life. Rabbi Sacks said, he said, my father was a gadol, in my words, he was a gadol in anava. He appreciated others. And Rabbi Sacks said, that's how he was reared, to understand that there's something, and there are some people, and there are values that are greater than us, that are different than us, that we can appreciate. Rabbi Sacks said he saw this himself, not just with his father, but even with people who maybe you wouldn't think would be anavim. On January 27th, 2005, the Queen of England, it was part of the Diamond Jubilee of Queen Elizabeth II, Hashem Yarech Yomeo Shnoseah. So she was having this big chagiga in honor of the Diamond Jubilee, but also it coincided with another anniversary. So she was hosting a group at St. James Palace that day in January. And Rabbi Sacks said that something strange happened at this reception with the Queen. The Queen ran late. Now, I'm not a big follower of the monarchy and the crown and Echveisfos and the supermarket, but I'll take his word. Rabbi Sacks says, a la Louis XVIII of France, punctuality is the politeness of kings. Says that the Queen never, ever has been late to an appointment in her life, and she's lived to face like 200 years. You know why she was late, he said? He said, because that day was the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. And who was she hosting at the palace? She was hosting a group of Holocaust survivors. And he said, what happened was, she was talking to each one of these survivors. These people who said to Rabbi Sacks afterwards that 65 years earlier they never thought they would see the next day, forget see the Queen of England. She sat with each one, and each one of them told her their life story. Because, of course, we're Jews. What do you mean? She has like a whole day of things to do. You have 5 minutes with the Queen. No, I have to tell you. I have to tell you where I'm from. I have to tell you my grandchildren. I have to show you pictures, Jews, Baruch Hashem. Rabbi Sacks said it was mamash the ultimate expression of anava, of gvuraso, a person who literally has the whole kingdom at their fingertips, but they ran late against all of their principles to give kavod, to give dignity and respect to a simple, anonymous Jew, a Holocaust survivor. It's a pella atzim. And you don't have to be Rabbi Sacks' father. You don't have to be the Queen of England. Each one of us. It's interesting. I experienced this. And we all have felt this at different times. I'm sure many of you, you've met with people who, they make you feel like nothing. You meet with them and they let you know that they are chashuv. They don't struggle with anava. Their mamish afflicted with a problem. They don't have anava. And then you have the opposite. Many years ago, we had just moved to Chicago. Not too long after we moved to Chicago, this happened. The Ribbono Shel Olam orchestrated it such, against my will, that I had to go to New York for a particular dinner. The Ribbono Shel Olam had to coerce me to go both to New York and to this dinner. But I had no choice. That's the way he orchestrated it. At this dinner, I met a guy. A guy works in a particular business. It's called hedge funds. So he's a guy in New York. He's a very well-known philanthropist. And I happened to cross paths with him at this dinner. And he said to me, you know, there's a business person, a banker, who I do business with in Chicago. You should really meet him. I said, okay. Shkoyach. So the next day, someone in his office sends an email to this banker in Chicago, and they set up a meeting that I can meet this banker. So I had the opportunity to meet this banker, who is an elderly gentleman who is Jewish, but maybe doesn't have an ongoing religious connection to Yiddishkeit. Meanwhile, he sits in an office. I went to this office. This office is bigger than the space that we're in, and it has three secretaries working for this one banker who's almost retired. I walked in there, and we had such a nice meeting, and I walked out there, I was like, I was struck by something. That this man, who by the folders on his desk and by the pictures on the wall, I could tell was a very chashuv person, had a certain knack. He had an ability to make me, who as a kid coming from, you know, young rabbi from the middle of nowhere, who just landed in Chicago, make feel like, oh, I belong here. I belong in Chicago. This is a good place, and I'm doing important things. But I didn't really chop 100%, even though with the pictures of George W. Bush and all kinds of sports memorabilia, I still didn't really chop what was going on until later we met for lunch. At that time, there was a kosher lunch place downtown called Metro Club. So we met at Metro Club. So we're sitting in Metro Club. I'm sitting in one chair. He's sitting in the other chair. He doesn't wear a yarmulke. And we're sitting and having lunch. And there were a couple of people from the neighborhood who came in. They were having lunch there. And two of them are in the banking industry. If I ever met the Ger Rebbe, this is how it would look. Shalom Aleichem. The Chabad Gadol, this is mamish, the greatest highlight of my day. These two guys walked over to the man who I'm having lunch with, and they're like, Shalom Aleichem, mamish, this is to see you is like mamish. And they're looking at me like, what are you doing with him? How did, what the, this doesn't. This man, it turns out, is one of the most influential, someone told me afterwards, one of the most influential Jewish businessmen, bankers, in all of Chicago, maybe in all of the Midwest. And yet, it's so interesting how not only when I met with him, but other people in the Kola orbit, they mentioned to me afterwards how he has a knack for making someone else feel chashuv. It's a tremendous midah. It's the midah of anava. Because if we're having that stance that I'm comfortable with who I am, I have my milas, I have my chesronos, but there's room for you, I don't have to browbeat you with all of my great accomplishments and all of my everything. You can also be a person. You might be 50 years younger, you might not be so accomplished. What's the difference? And you know what? Maybe you can even learn from someone. Rabbi Sacks says humility is more than just a virtue. It is a form of perception, a language in which the I is silent so that I can hear the thou, the unspoken call beneath the human speech, the divine whisper within all that moves, the voice of otherness that calls me to redeem its loneliness with a touch of love. Humility is what opens us to the world. A couple of years ago, there was a guy who did research. It was published in the Wall Street Journal about smiling. And they did research about the association between smiling and your station in work, in the workplace. Who do you smile at and who smiles back at you? Do you feel like it's beneath me to smile at that person? Or can you find a way to smile at the person who's sweeping the floor in the hallway? The title of the article was too important to smile back, the boss effect. Anava, bein odom lachaveru. If we have that stance, can we smile at that other person? Can we smile back? One simple example. Another simple example, the person collecting tzedakah. If I have that stance of anava, an accurate sense of self, I ask myself, well, whose money is this? Who am I? Am I big, some big macher because I have more money in my pocket than that person has in theirs? So when they come knocking at the door, how do I look at them? Do I look down at them? Or do I say, wait a second, the Rebbe Shalom gave me this financial situation, whatever I am, and he gave that person that situation. Does that give me the right? Should I be looking down at them? Or Anava says, this is where I am, and the Rebbe Shalom put that person where they are. Do they have less of a Tzelem Elokim than I do? Or do we have the same Tzelem Elokim? How do I interact with that person? A third example, the difficult people in our lives. It's taka difficult. But sometimes, if we have a stance of anava, we can approach that person and maybe we can dial back some of the frustration, some of the anger, some of the hurt. Because we could say to ourselves, you know what? That person, they may be difficult, but there's something valuable about them. There's something meaningful about them. There's something redeeming about them. So maybe I shouldn't just destroy this relationship in its entirety. Or even just on a small interaction. If I have that orientation, the stance of anava, when that person cuts in front of me on the line, a Jew or Hungarian, so if I have a stance of anava that says, you know what? There's an element of curiosity, of the vow. Maybe that person, mamish, is in a rush. Maybe there's something urgent. Maybe they're dealing with something. I know that sometimes, maybe I have to ask Mechila, Sarev Yom Kippur, sometimes I'm in the supermarket and I'm a little foot tumult. Maybe I'm on the phone. Maybe I'm thinking about something. So I'll ask your Mechila for anybody here I ever cut off in Jewel. Maybe that other person also. What I'm trying to say is that if we have the stance of anava, when it comes to Bein Adam LaChaveru, all of our interactions can be different. Bein Adam LaMakom. The Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, he was a Talmud Vosik, he was a close disciple of the Hilige Mizritcher Magid. So he once went to visit the Magid, and he knocked on the door. And the Magid was in his study, and he said in Yiddish, "Wer ist du?" Which means, who is here? Sir Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the Alter Rebbe answered, "Ich," which means in Yiddish, "I." "Ich bin du, I'm here." So the Magid opens the door, and he lets the Alter Rebbe in. The Rebbe sits down. They start talking for a moment, and then the Alter Rebbe sees that the Magid is like thinking something. And the Magid turns to him and says, "Thank you so much for coming. Be gesund, travel safe." So Alter Rebbe knew that meant this meeting is over. But he was very confused. Okay, but the Rebbe said, "Travel safe." The Holy Magid said, "Travel safe." So that means he's going to get going and he hopes that blessing will be fulfilled. Meanwhile, on the way, not too far along, he stopped at an inn for the night. And at that inn, there was a big commotion that the next morning, there was a bris. There was a family that was making a sudas bris. They were making a bris in this little kretschma. So it was awesome. The Alter Rebbe gets to be participant in the bris. But nobody in the town knew who he was. No one knew he was the founder of the Lubavitch movement, the author of the Tanya, the author of the Shulchan Aruch Rav. No one knew. They just saw he was a Jew. So they said, "You come too. Come to join us for the Sudas Bris." So he comes, joins the Bris, and sits at the Suda. After the Suda is over, everybody benches. They take everything back to the kitchen, and then there's a commotion. The Alter Rebbe hears a big commotion. Somebody comes out of the kitchen, big burly looking guy, and he starts looking around, and then he finds He looks and he points to the Alter Rebbe. And he goes over and he picks him up by his jacket and he starts shaking him. And he says, "It was you! It was you! It was you! It must have been you!" He starts shaking him. The Rebbe says, "What? What?" So the man shaking him, he says, "We counted the silver in the kitchen and someone stole a spoon and it must have been you." And then he starts hitting him. So the Alter Rebbe says, "Not I!" He's screaming, "Not I! Not I! Not I!" This guy says, "All right, give me 2 minutes. I'll be back." He goes into the kitchen and he starts yelling in the kitchen, "The guy didn't do it. He says he didn't do it. Who did it?" Meanwhile, the guy comes out 5 minutes later. He says, "Bekoshi, a shtickle apology." He's like, "Yeah, someone in the kitchen took it. We got it. Get out of here." It's the Alter Rebbe. He runs right back to the Maggid. And meanwhile, right as he's about to knock on the door, the Maggid opens it. And the Alter Rebbe says, "I got it. I got it. When you said, 'Who's at the door?' and I said, 'I am,' in our world, there's no I. There's only one I. Ani Hashem. It's only one I. So why do you think it is that by Chassidim, this is such a deep and important thing?" Pasuk says in Mishlei, Tovas Hashem Kol Gevah Lev, the Ribono Shel Olam cannot stand. He cannot countenance gaiva, arrogance. Gemara says in Sota Daf Hey, "Kol Adam Sheish Bo Gasus Haruach," a person who has arrogance, Hakadosh Baruch Hu says, "Ein Ani Vehu Yechol Lada Ba'Olam." I can't live in the same world with that person. I can't occupy the same space, because if a person inflates the I, if a person doesn't have Anava, so then where is there room for the Ribon Shel Olam? Their I, their inflated sense of self, has occupied the whole space. It's dochik ragli shchina. There's no room for the Ribono Shel Olam. When we have a proper sense of ourself, we understand we are Yetzir Kapov Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are God's emissaries. We're small, feeble, frail human beings that the Ribono Shel Olam put here on a mission from Him, with capital H. But if we think, you know, you should know who I am, the Ribono Shel Olam says, there's not even space. This is how Dr. Tversky, Dr. Abraham J. Tversky, Dr. Shia Tversky, Zecher Tzadav HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is how he types the story. Many of you know the story, that when the Kotzker Rebbe was a small child, he went to the Heiliger Rebunim of Pshischa, and Rebbe Rebunim said to him, "Where is God?" So first he said, "God is up there." Rebunim says, no, God is not up there," and they kept going around and around. The Rebbe Rebunim said to the Holy Kotzker when he was a little boy, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Morgenstern, he said, "Where is the Ribono Shel Olam? Wherever we let him in. Wherever we make space for him. If we inflate our sense of self, then there's no room for him," said Dr. Tversky. How can we have a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam if we don't make space for him? If we don't have an accurate sense of the reality that Ein Od Milvado, He's in the center, and we're just part actors, we're part of the story, but it's His story. Who's the I? Where's the I? Davening. If our Bein Odom L'Makom, if our stance is a stance klape shmaya of Anava, then how does our davening look? You know, one of the big challenges that we have in davening is what we call direct deposit. You know about this. No one writes checks anymore, I think. Right? At least for me, the check doesn't come in the mail. It goes direct deposit into the bank account. We have credit cards. Many of us are blessed, Baruch Hashem, with Parnasa, Bahar Chava, and Bahar Vacha. The people are blessed. They don't have to live like they did in Europe, you know, where getting an egg was a big deal. Rachman Litzlan. Shouldn't have no such things. So thank God we have it good. So we feel like direct deposit, we got it made. What do we need? We need you. We need you. We got it. It's true for us. It's actually much worse It's much more challenging for adolescents, but in many cases, we're overgrown adolescents in this inyan. Adolescents, many high school kids, they have a car, or they have a credit card, or they have an unlimited fund that they can dip into, or it's limited, but epis they know if, God forbid, they really need it. So what do they need to ask for? Where's the anava? To realize, mimcha hakol, that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us everything? That when we daven, we recognize we're nothing without you? You are the soul, the engine that keeps this all running, and you give us everything. You decide at the beginning of Rosh Hashanah what we're going to have and what we're not going to have. If our stance of Ein Adam L'Makom is an appropriate sense of anava, of course we're going to feel like, wow, thank you, and please. Is there any room, is there any havamina for what the Pasuk calls kochi va'otzam yadi, a sense of I did this? A mistaken sense of this, the crazy notion that maybe I'm in charge? That I did this, I earned this, it's mine. And so what do I need to ask for? I got it. When it comes to mitzvos, our stance in mitzvos, how do we understand them? How do we think about them? If we understand that a mitzvah is a way for us as small human beings who live just a short life to connect to something which is transcendent. So if we have that real sense of humility, of anava, of self-awareness, does it matter whether we understand it or not? It's beautiful to learn Tamei HaMitzvos, to taste the mitzvah, to appreciate the flavor, and to realize that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us mitzvos, letov lanu, that he doesn't need our mitzvos, they don't do anything for him. They're a gift to us. Or do we view mitzvos, well, I don't understand that. If I don't understand it, the great philosopher of the ages, if I don't understand that, well, I'm not going to do that. It doesn't make sense to me. To me, it doesn't make sense. How many times have we thought that? How many times have we heard that? It doesn't resonate with me. That one doesn't resonate with me. A few other ones, they do. This one doesn't. Is that the stance of anava, or is that a stance of misplaced gaiva, thinking that I have to understand everything? Maybe there are certain things, lo machshavos sai machshavos eichem. We're not going to understand. Amarti achkama Shlomo HaMelech said he was very wise. V'yirachokam many. There were things that even Shlomo HaMelech didn't understand. And that came from a place of anava, of a healthy sense of who we are, of self-awareness. And finally, bein adam li'atzmo, between a person and themselves. Who do we want to be? Who can we be? We can become that through anava. Awesome maisa with the Heiliger Reb Zusha. The Reb Zusha of Anapoli was unbelievably humble. He had not just anava, he had shiftless. He was amazing, amazing, the Heiliger Reb Zusha. So unfortunately, there was a rabbi in Anapoli who was very bitter. And he came to the Reb Reb Zusha and he said, I want to understand. How is it that you're so happy? The Rebbe Reb Zusha was known to be a person of great contentment of happiness. He found joy in every circumstance, mamish every circumstance. So this rabbi who was living a bitter life, he said to Reb Zusha, why are you so happy? And why am I so bitter? I'm honest with myself. I am so bitter. I can't take it anymore. I need help. So Reb Zusha said, let me ask you a question. What happens when Chaim Yankel, when he makes a wedding? You know, in Anapoli, there's a guy, Chaim Yankel. He makes a wedding. So they have a guy who is the official invitation guy. You know, it's like in certain communities, they have the invitation person who makes the invitations. In Europe, they had an invitation guy. That was the guy who went around with the list telling all the local folks who was invited to the wedding. They didn't send invitations. They didn't even have evites. Can imagine. So they had one guy who had a clipboard. He went around with a list, and he went to knock on people's doors. There's a wedding. Chaim Yankel is making a wedding Friday afternoon. Please join me. This is the guy. So Reb Zusha says to the rabbi, he says, Rabbi, I have to ask you, what happens when the wedding invitation guy comes? He says, Do you look on the list? Do you look on the list and you see that your name is number 14 on the list? You see that your name is number 14, and you think to yourself, wait a second, I'm a chash of a rabbi. How could I be number 14 on the list? I'm very insulted. And you know what? I'm number 14. That's fine. I don't have to go on time. I'm not going to go on time. I'm going to go fashionably late. Meanwhile, what happens? Chaim Yankel's making the wedding. Comes Friday afternoon, and he's looking around. Where is the rabbi? I would love for the rabbi to be the Masadah Kedushin. The rabbi's not there. So Chaim Yankel asks somebody else to be Masadah Kedushin. The rabbi shows up at the wedding a few minutes late, and he sees somebody else is the Masadah Kedushin. Now he says, now the rabbi's mamash very upset. So you know what he does? Because there's no room. So he goes out. He goes to sit outside for a little bit so it shouldn't look so bizionistic. Meanwhile, everybody, all the holy peasants, all the Jews, they all take seats. By the time the rabbi comes back, the physician says, what happened? You come back in the hall. There are no seats. Chaim Yankel was looking for the rabbi to put him on the dais, but he wasn't around. So now the dais is full. Not only is the dais full, it used to be open seating. I guess they were easygoing, you know, open seating. Not only is there no room on the dais, all the Jews took all the tables. The guy doesn't even have a place to sit. So now he's mamish, smoking hot, so furious. So somebody sees him, oh, rabbi, why don't you come? So they sit him down at the table. You know that table. I've been at that table. The table, when you go to the ballroom, it's like 30 tables wide, 15 tables deep. You're at table 72 next to the emergency exit. Which part of that is a good thing because if God forbid there were an emergency, you would be out of there. You wouldn't have a problem. So don't be insulted if you're at the emergency exit table. If you need the exit stage left, fine gizint. You know, it's okay. So the rabbi ends up at table 72 in the corner. They call to the kitchen. They say, is there anything left? They're like, they have some gribbiness. They have some schmaltz. They put some schmaltz on a table, on a plate with a potato. They give it to him. The rabbi comes home and he's mamish. He's tearing his hair out. He tells his wife how terrible it is. Bizyoinus. Reb Zusha says to the rabbi, he says, when the guy comes to my house, Reb Zusha never said I. Is this say, Zusha, you're invited to Chaim Yankel's wedding. I close my eyes, I say, wow, how beautiful is that? That Chaim Yankel would think that I should come to his wedding. So Reb Zusha says, you know what I do? I say, so nice, they invited me to the wedding. So I come on time. So I'm sitting there on the side, and Chaim Yankel comes over and says, the Heiliger Reb Zusha, would you like to be Masada Kedushin? I'm like, I don't know if I'm right to be Masada Kedushin, but I'm here, I'm happy, whatever you want. So they asked me to come up to be Masada Kedushin. I'm finished being Masada Kedushin. I'm ready to go find a seat. But I'm the only rabbi standing under the chuppah. So the Balabas Chaim Yankel says, Reb Zusha, would you come sit with us on the dais? I sit on the dais. I have that delicious piece of chicken with the carrots that were peeled just nicely. And I come home and I say to my wife, Mrs. Zusha, oh, what a beautiful simcha. What do we want to be? Do we want to be the Fabisina guy? Or, in your case, not for God forbid anybody would be like this, but that Fabisina woman, that Fabisina person, that bitter rabbi, who always is like, it's always something that I didn't get, the recognition that I was expecting, that I wanted. Do we want to be that? Or do we want to have a perspective, do we want to have a stance on life, which is anava, that recognizes, you know what? I have many milas, I've contributed to this person's life, but I also understand that I have a place. And maybe that person has other things. Maybe they have other priorities. Maybe they're just writing the list alphabetically. Maybe they forgot. Maybe the email got lost. Or no. You know what I'm talking about. This, it's like the Gemara hands. Do we want to be that? That's the Bein Adam L'Atzmo. Who do we want to be? Do we want a person to be that person who goes through the stance in life who's like Reb Zusha, that we're just happy? that we're not brigas with everybody all the time, that we don't have every hang up in the book? Do we just want to be happy? Bein adam liatzmo. Well, maybe the key to that is anava also. Rabbi Sacks, and in conclusion, to summarize all of this, keeps referring to one man. One man as, in his life, a prime example of anava. He said he learned anava from his father and from one other person. And I'll tell you one last story to introduce it, because it's getting late. Tomorrow night is the Yom HaKadosh. But I hope we feel like we've grown with something. In the 1970s, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, the Heiliger Rebbe Menachem Mendel Schneerson, got thousands and thousands of letters from people all across the world. And people wrote to the Rebbe with all kinds of questions. They wrote with requests, tefillos, bakashos. But people also asked the Rebbe many philosophical questions. The Rebbe was a brilliant gaon, adir, a brilliant philosopher, an engineer, a thinker, a scientist, everything you could imagine. So people asked him all kinds of questions. So a man sent a letter to the Rebbe, and he sent the letter to the Rebbe with a whole slew of deep philosophical questions. And as was the case, somehow the Rebbe made time to answer these questions. It's hard to imagine how this was, although Dr. Weiss, should live and be well, said that the Rebbe slept very little. He never went on vacation, not a single day of vacation in his life, from 1951 until he was out of commission. Never went on vacation. He had tea with the Rebbe, I think like 2 in the morning, Dr. Weiss told me, 2, 3 in the morning. So this guy writes a letter to the Rebbe, and he gets the letter in response. He gets the answer. So he opens the letter, and what did the Rebbe send him? He looks at it and says, wait a minute. He sees that it's the same letter that he had sent the Rebbe. He didn't understand. And then he looked again. He noticed that every line, one word, was circled by the Rebbe. The letter I. The Rebbe went through the letter and circled every letter I. And then the man understood. Were his philosophical questions really questions? Or is this some kind of projection of his own interests, of his own priorities, of his own story that he's projecting and forming as a question, but it's really all about the I? Rebbe says, let's identify. Just circle every single I in that letter and then send the questions back to me. Rabbi Sacks says, you know who taught him humility? His father taught him humility, and the Rebbe taught him humility. If somebody were to ask you, who is the most influential, or one of, arguably, the most transformational Jews in the last 200 years, it's indisputable that the Lubavitcher Rebbe would be at the top of your list. He'd certainly be in the top 10, maybe the top 5. Has anybody else changed literally the entire world? Can you go anywhere where the emissaries, the influence, the spark of the Rebbe has not permeated? Nowhere! I've never even heard of the countries where these shluchim are. Rabbi Sacks said that's because the Rebbe was an anav. Because when he was a kid in Cambridge and was searching, and he came to America with no money, he went to 770. And he was told he had to meet two people, Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rabbi Schneerson. So he shows up in the 60s to 770, and he says, I'd like to make an appointment with the Rebbe. So he tells the story. It's a beautiful story. You can look it up online. He says the chassid nearly burst out laughing. He said, what are you talking about? People, they wait months, years to meet for yechidus with the Rebbe. What are you talking about? He says to a random chassid, he said, I'm going
to my aunt in Los Angeles. If the Rebbe ever has time, this is my number. Says Taka, 3 weeks later, in Los Angeles, he got a call that the Rebbe will see him. So he says, Rabbi Sachs, but Baruch Hashem, at that time he was a college student, he took a Greyhound bus from Los Angeles to Crown Heights in the 60s. He said he arrived at the Rebbe and he was blown away. And he tells many aspects of that story. But he was mamish transformed by the fact that the Rebbe was the ultimate expression of an anav. He had the most incredible, remarkable sense of humility, of self-awareness. He didn't carry himself with 1 ounce of arrogance. How did he dress? Very simply. His hat, traditional, as you know. The way that he interacted with people, that he would spend time, that he would make time for a random college student who dropped his name and phone number from England with a chassid at 7:70 to meet with him at 1 o'clock in the morning. Because you know what the Gemara says about the Ribbono Shel Olam? Ribbono Shel Olam is the ultimate anav, because he doesn't just take care of the wealthy, of the Talmidei Chachamim, of the aristocracy, of the people who sit in the front of the shul. The Ribbono Shel Olam takes care of everyone, because that's what anava is about. It's about understanding that everybody has a place. And that the Rebbe's secret to transforming the Jewish world was recognizing the greatness in every Chabad Shliach, in every Chabad Chassid, in every Jew, and every human being. And that came from his tremendous anava. The Rambam says that we can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. We can be great. We can do it. It's not one specific path, but perhaps it's this stance, the stance of anava, that can transform our ben adam lachaveiro, our ben adam lamakom, and our ben adam leatzmo, to become and bring us to that greatness and that happiness, that contentment that we're searching for, and ultimately that closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world and the next. I wish us all a Gemar Chasima Tova. We should be blessed with anava in our lives and the ability to pursue. We're never going to get there, but to pursue this stance of anava.